Good morning. My name is Ashley, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Peter Vanley, you may begin your conference.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. This is Peter Vanley from Neuberger Berman, and welcome to the NBPE Investor Update Call. I'm joined today by my colleagues John Boozer and Paul Daggett. As always, the presentation we will be referring to can be found on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. So turning to page one of the presentation, NBPE is a closed-end investment company providing investors with a diversified exposure to the private equity asset class and the opportunity for both capital gains as well as current income. We're listed on the LSE and the Euronext, and we're managed by NB Alternatives, the private equity division of Neuberger Berman. NBPE focuses on direct investments in the equity and debt of private equity-backed companies, and direct investments make up 80% of our NAV currently, and we expect that percentage to increase over time. We have the policy of paying a sustainable dividend. Our current dividend is 40. We paid 45 cents in dividends so far this year. Our annualized dividend yield is 4.2% based on the current share price, or 3.3% based on NAV. Importantly, our dividends are more than completely covered by the cash yield from our direct yielding portfolio. So as mentioned, NBPE is managed by the private equity team of Neuberger Berman, as shown on page two. At Neuberger Berman, our team of more than 200 private equity professionals manage over $22 billion across fund investments, co-investments, private debt, and other strategies. And while NBPE does not invest in all these areas, it does benefit from the scale, resources, sourcing, and insights of this broad team. So let's turn to the 2014 highlights year-to-date for NBPE on page three. Now, we're very proud to inform you that NBPE is having a very good start to the year and first half of the year. Our total return NAV per share increased 9.9% year to date through the end of July and 17.5% on an LTM basis. We've also had strong share price appreciation, which we'll discuss later in the presentation. We've also seen strong distribution activity. We've received $118 million of distributions from across our portfolio. We've also had robust new direct investment activity. We've made $189 million of new investments and follow-on investments in direct, both equity and yielding investments, and direct investments now make up 80% of our NAV. Now, this includes the 45% of our NAV in direct yielding investments with a total yield of 10.2% and a cash yield of 9.4%. And this is what I referred to before as the cash yield that more than fully covers our dividend on a run rate basis. So now I'd like to hand it over to my partner, John Boozer, who will give you more details on these financial highlights. John?
Thank you, Peter. So as Peter said, we've had some excellent progress in the portfolio during the first half of 2014. And if you look at page four, we can look at some of the numbers that reflect that. And as Peter also said, we've been focused on a strategy of having a larger and larger percentage of our assets in direct investments, both equity co-investments and funded and direct yielding investments. And you'll see that reflected in these numbers on page four as well. So just looking at a couple highlights on this page, the first line, and obviously this page, the left column is July 31st. And the right column is where we were at the audit for December 31st, 2013. So the first line is fund investments, and you can see we've had a decline as the older fund portfolio continues to get realized of $24 million from 291.7 to 267.7. So the fund investments continue, although they perform, as we'll talk about in a bit, they continue to be a smaller and smaller percentage of our portfolio. If you go on down a few lines, you'll see the totals of our direct yielding investments and equity co-investments, and then the total of both of those. And you can see at December 31st, 2013, the total of both of those direct type of investments was $346 million. And now as we sit here at July 31st, or as of July 31st, we'd increased that to $529.6 million, or about a $184 million increase, as again, the portfolio reflects our strategy of a larger and larger portion in direct investments. You go down a couple more lines where we have the cash and cash equivalents and then the credit facility on the chart. And you look back to December 31st and you say, see we had $63.7 million of cash. Because we've been able to source many very attractive investment opportunities, we've managed to take that cash balance, if you go then to the July 31st, to where there's $34.7 of cash, but we have $65 million drawn on our credit facility, or about a net negative cash position of $30 million. So we've had a $94 million swing in our cash position since the start of the year as we've gotten fully deployed across what we think are very strong investments. If you go down three or four more lines, you'll see the growth of the net asset value, including cumulative dividends aligned. On December 31st, we were at 645.1 net asset value, including cumulative dividends. July 31st, 707 million, or 62 million of increased value for the portfolio and for the shareholders in the underlying portfolio. So a very good first half of 2014. If you flip on to page five, you'll see the diversification of our private equity exposure. You see the asset class by fair value in the pie chart on the left. The direct yielding investments at 37% and the equity co-investments at 29%, and the fund investments continue to decrease to 34%. On the right, you'll see the asset class by geography, and this reflects our tactical allocation to investments in North America. As we do and have done diligence on managers, looking for managers who can add value to their portfolio company or credit positions in direct yielding investments that we think are solid and will have both a return of all the interest and all the principal. We've tended towards North America because there's just a little bit more solid macroeconomic risk situation than we believe there is in the rest of the world. And that's proven to be an effective strategy for this portfolio. If you move on to page six, you'll see some additional investments or additional analysis of our portfolio. In the left-hand pie chart, it's the current fair value by year of deployment. And what you'll see there is 70% of the fair value invested since the beginning of 2010, or has been invested since the beginning of 2010. We strongly believe that a strong portfolio is a portfolio with a high degree of turnover in the assets where investments are being made and then realized by the by us or by the underlying managers in the case of a fund investment. And over the years, you've seen this chart continue to move to more and more recent investments as the older investments get realized. So we're very proud that at this point, the pre-2008, for example, is just 15% of the total portfolio. Likewise, if you go to the right-hand box, which is the 2012 to year-to-date 2014 fair value of the assets that we've acquired, 27% of the fair value has been invested in equity co-investments and 60% in direct yielding investments. Again, this is part of our strategy to diminish the number of fund investments in the portfolio. Move on to page seven. It has some portfolio year-to-date information about distributions and then also the investments we've made through capital calls into funds and direct investments. On the right-hand side, if we talk about the capital calls and direct investments, you see that $135.7 million has been invested in direct yielding investments, $53.5 million into equity co-investments, and only $5 million from residual calls by funds that are in the fund portfolio. So very little new capital going into the fund portfolio. On the left-hand side chart, you see 2014 year-to-date distributions of $118 million. You know, that is over an asset base at the start of the year of $637 million. So we've actually had cash realizations from the portfolio of 19% in the first half of the year. So this, again, shows a very robust portfolio where assets are gaining value and being disposed of within the portfolio. The right-hand side also shows that on those assets that we're selling and realizing during this period, we have a nice increase in the value from the immediately preceding value of that on our books relative to where they are realized. So you see in buyout realizations, there's an average uplift of 24% on the immediately preceding carrying value, and in debt realizations, an average uplift of 10% of the immediately preceding carrying value, and that's led to a good portion of the uplift in the overall value of the portfolio during 2014. If you look down at page eight, this is a longer look at the distribution activity of NBPE from Q1 of 2013 through the most recent quarter plus July. And what you'll see is we've had $118.1 million in distributions, as I mentioned. But you'll also see, if you look at Q1, for example, you'll see the direct yielding portfolio had many realizations in Q1, fewer, obviously, in year two. But you'll also notice that in Q2, the fund portfolio continues to liquidate very nicely. So the fund portfolio, which has had over the first half of the year, the $19 million that you see in Q1 and the Q2, 33.4, so a total of about $52 million of realizations, that's based on a decline in the overall NAV of the fund portfolio of only 24 and only 5 of new contributions, so a total of 29 offsetting that 52, so $23 million of uplift in the value of the portfolio coming from the fund. So even as the older funds are running off, we're getting good performance out of those managers. So across all of our investments, whether they be the direct yielding investments, the direct equity investments, or the fund investments, we're seeing value added to the portfolio during 2014. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul, who's going to go in a little bit more detail about some of our investments.
Thank you, John. So over the next 8 slides, I'm going to cover the direct investment portfolios, starting with the direct yielding portfolio, moving on to the co-investment. So starting on page 9, the direct yielding portfolio summary, you'll see that today we have about $300 million of fair value in direct yielding investments. That's about 37% of our total fair value. As we mentioned, that has a 9.4% cash yield, generating $26 million of run rate cash at this point in time. The portfolio is split into 2 parts, the corporate private debt, which is senior secured loans, second lien debt, mezzanine investments, and PIK notes in private equity-backed companies. We have 22 of those investments at this point, which is $245 million of fair value. 3/4 of that is floating rate debt, and 94% of it has a LIBOR floor of 1 or 1.25%. We show you some statistics of the portfolio as a whole here at the bottom of the corporate debt section. You can see the weighted average total debt on these companies is 5.5 times EBITDA, and the senior debt, which is the debt above us in the capital structure, is 3.7 times, which we feel is very manageable for the types of credits we have in the portfolio. The healthcare credit portfolio is a little bit smaller. It's $50 million, just over $50 million of fair value. This is royalty-backed notes, senior secured loans, convertible notes in healthcare companies, very often specialty biopharma companies, which takes a very specialized set of analyses to be able to underwrite these loans. And the result is the cash yield is a little bit higher than you see in the corporate portfolio, so we feel it's a good diversifier and a nice part of the portfolio to have. Page 10, we look at the new corporate private debt investments in 2014. We've made 9 of those so far this year, which is about $100 million of fair value, or 15% of the NAV of the portfolio just this year. Looking across the portfolio, the different types of investments, you'll see that 6 of the 9 investments are in second lien loans. The interest rates on those vary between LIBOR plus 7% with a 1% LIBOR floor and a 0.5% original issue discount, up to LIBOR plus 8.6 with a 1% floor and a 2.25% original issue discount. Again, we feel these are very attractive interest rates given the types of credits we're underwriting and particularly given the interest rate environment we're in. One of the other investments is in a portfolio of small business loans, and the other 2 are mezzanine transactions with an 11.75 and 12% total yield to those investments. We've covered the first 5 of these investments on the left in the first quarter call, so I won't go through them. I'll just give you a few words on the 4 companies on the right. Galco Industrial Electronics is a wholesale distributor of electrical components. It's a high value add, high margin business, which generates strong cash flow, which is obviously exactly the type of business we like to lend to. Authentic Brands Group is a brand development and trademark licensing business with a portfolio of well-known brands in the fashion, sports, and lifestyle categories. Again, a high-margin, low-capex business alongside a very good sponsor in Leonard Green. Converge One is an information technology business. It provides communication solutions, including IP telephony, contact centers, unified communications to medium and large enterprises. It has a large set of revenue that comes from maintenance and managed services, giving us predictable cash streams. Again, one of the things we look for when we're making debt investments. Finally, K&N Engineering, the most recent investment we've made in this space, makes automotive air filters and intake systems, which has a high market share and, once again, a high margin. Moving on to the healthcare credit investments on page 11, these, as I mentioned, are very specialized companies that we lend to through our healthcare credit program. Three of these are senior secured loans, three are convertible notes, two are second lien in private equity-backed companies, and we've covered six of these eight in the prior quarter's call. So the one that we have not covered, the one company which we have two securities in, is Biotherapeutics Company B, where we have a senior secured term loan as well as convertible notes, equity, and warrants broken out on the far right of the page, as you'll see. This is a small company that focuses on drugs for rare diseases. It has a portfolio of drugs which are already producing revenue, which also serve as collateral for the loan, as well as a pipeline of R&D products. This is very typical of the type of company we look to invest to, which has that portfolio of existing products, but is looking to develop some of these new products and looks for cash to do that. And that's exactly what we've done here in this particular loan. Moving on to the co-investment portfolio on slide 12, you'll see that we have built a very large portfolio in this space, $232 million, which is 29% of the fair value, across 52 different companies, diversified by sponsor, industry, and vintage year. These are mostly buyout investments with some growth and special situations investments. We have 35 different financial sponsors represented, again showing the power of our platform to be able to diversify by that many sponsors. It's a young portfolio, as John mentioned, with over 73% of the fair value invested since 2010. And the other thing I would note, which also echoes some of John's comments, is that we do look for a short time to liquidity wherever we can. So one thing you'll see when we talk about the new investments is a lot of the investments we've made have been what we call midlife investments, where we invest alongside a sponsor who is looking to raise additional capital, very often to fund an add-on acquisition or for some other reason, for example, to remove minority shareholders somewhere in the middle of the life of the investment. That means that we generally have a shorter expected time to liquidity by going in at that point in the investments. We've been busy in this area during the year with $54 million of contributions, as well as $22 million of distributions from the co-investment portfolio. And the performance in the portfolio has been very good, with almost 90% of the fair value held above cost at 31st of July. And I would also mention we've had two IPOs in the portfolio so far this year, as well as two realizations, one of those completed, one of those announced, but yet to complete. So again, we have seen good liquidity in the portfolio as well as strong performance. New investments we've made 12 of during the year. These are shown on page 13. Again, a lot of these we've covered in prior calls. So the first five on the left we discussed in the Q1 call. Just to summarize the overall activity in the year so far, five of these 12 are in midlife transactions that I mentioned. Three of the 12 are in growth transactions. By growth, we mean the money is going into the company to fund growth as opposed to going out to existing shareholders. These are companies that are growing rapidly and need additional capital for expansion. And then four of the 12 are in traditional buyouts. There's 12 sponsors represented. Four of the companies are in industrials, three in healthcare, two in energy, and three across other other industry sectors. So just to cover very quickly the companies which we didn't discuss in the Q1 call, starting with the logo that says Hilco. The company is actually called Hilsinger. Hilco is one of their brands. This is a distributor and manufacturer of eyewear and ophthalmic products. It has a very strong market share in all the subsectors it participates in and is looking to pursue growth both organically and through a buy and build strategy. We have two oil and gas midlife transactions next. Oil and Gas Exploration Company is a company that has not been publicly announced, but this is a liquids-focused business in the Rocky Mountain region. It acquired additional acreage to expand in a complementary geography to where it already operates. The idea is here to build scale so that it can pursue an exit in a relatively short time frame. So this is, again, ticks a lot of the boxes we like. We like the sector. It's an extremely strong sponsor and has that shorter expected time to liquidity. MBI is a midlife transaction as well. This is in the energy services space. This is a business that focuses on fluid management and well intervention services in the Bakken Shale in North Dakota. Again, this is a midlife transaction, which in this case was being used to remove minority shareholders to really clean up the capital structure, and we came in to fund some of that equity. Corona is a growth capital business alongside Victoria Capital Partners, one of the leading sponsors in the Pan Latin American area. This is the leading building products company in Latin America, or one of the leading building products companies in Latin America, based in Colombia. It manufactures, distributes sanitary ware, tiles, paint, that type of thing, operating in Colombia as well as in Brazil and the USA. Aster DM Healthcare is the leading healthcare conglomerate in the Middle East and India. This operates hospitals, medical centers, pharmacies across the Middle East. Again, is funding or taking additional funding to continue that expansion across the Middle East. Council is a growth capital investment we made focused on the healthcare space, but in many ways really a technology business that uses software and robotics to re-engineer genetic testing. So for example, with one service, it can combine 100 different genetic tests to allow carrier screening before a couple decides whether to have a child and to understand the risks involved in terms of genetic diseases. Carrier screening is the one test they have at the moment. They're looking to expand into other areas, and to do that, they needed a new lab, and that was why they raised capital in this particular funding that we participated in. And then the final business is a traditional buyout investment we made alongside TPG Capital in the financial services space. The warranty group provides extended warranties for automotive as well as consumer products. This is a high-frequency, low-severity claims business, which makes it a very predictable business. The other thing we like about this is that the cash is received up front, but the revenue is recognized over a long period, which means that the buyout, you can really recognize the growth patterns and a lot of the future revenues at the point you actually go into this business. So we like the visibility that we see into future earnings here. So that's a summary of the investments we've made so far in this year. The next thing we've done on page 14, which we do every 6 months, is to look at the underlying portfolio and really understand the performance metrics. What we do is we look at the 50 largest buyout investments we have in the portfolio. You'll see that this time there are 38 companies we were able to value by traditional metrics, and then 12 companies in the power generation, utilities, financial institutions, and then publicly traded companies, which trade on different metrics, which we were not able to value on buyout metrics. So to focus on the left-hand side of the page, those 38 companies represent $163 million of fair value, which is 21% of the private equity fair value, 48% of the buyout fair value. So a very meaningful portion of the portfolio represented in these 38 companies. The weighted average valuation multiple is 10.5 times EBITDA. As you all have seen in the Q2 report, that's a little bit above what S&P shows as new buyout values in the market today. The reason that we feel very comfortable with that is that the growth of these companies is also above the market rate. As you can see, the weighted average revenue growth and EBITDA growth, just by chance, both happen to be 16.4%. So we're seeing really strong growth in earnings and in revenue in these companies, and for that reason, we feel very good about the valuation levels of these companies. To drill down a little bit on those by sector, on page 15, we've broken out the debt multiple, the EBITDA multiple, as well as the revenue and EBITDA growth by these different sectors. I'll just focus on a couple. Healthcare and industrials are the largest two, which both are around $33 million of fair value, both have seven companies in them. To start with industrials, you'll see that this is an area which has shown very good revenue growth. EBITDA growth has not been as strong, yet the multiples are relatively high for this sector compared to the others. The reason that we feel comfortable with that is that actually, if you look at the companies in those seven companies, five of those are co-investments. Two of those co-investments have either announced a realization or expected to pursue a realization in the very short term. Those happen to be the two highest valued companies in that particular area of the portfolio. The two lowest valued companies are new buyouts we've done in that particular portfolio. So what that shows is that we've been able to access good investments that we really like the growth prospects for, which aren't showing through yet, at reasonable valuations, and that we're expecting to exit some of these faster growing companies at very good valuations. Again, it shows our strategy in action of hopefully buying low and selling high after the companies have grown. Healthcare space is looking a little bit more like you might expect in a more mature area of the portfolio, in that the revenue has grown, but the EBITDA has grown even more. So good growth in this particular part of the portfolio. Again, these companies are valued relatively highly, but once again, we've looked at the individual companies in this portfolio, some really strong companies that we feel very good about the prospects for, and we feel the valuations are very reasonable in this space. And then the final comment I'll make is just on the energy services, because it obviously does stand out by the extremely large growth we're showing. We do weight these charts based on the fair value of the companies within the portfolio, and the reason that this is showing up as high as it is that there's three companies with growth greater than 20%, and in particular, there's one company that has grown 200% over this time period. It's really a buy and build strategy in the midstream, U.S. midstream space is growing really well, but the portfolio as a whole in the energy services space really is performing well, as you can see in this chart. And then the final slide before I hand back to Peter is a new piece of analysis we've added on the public securities in the portfolio. We feel it's important to make sure this is highlighted because clearly public securities offer very good transparency to the valuation. It also shows the amount of liquidity that we've had or are expecting to have as these particular public securities are liquidated by the underlying sponsors. So 9% of the portfolio today is in public securities. As you'll see in the breakout box on the right, the five largest exposures are listed. The top three of those are co-investments that we've made. In the case of Sabre and Freescale, those are older co-investments, which have now been turned into public securities, which we would expect to be liquidated in an orderly fashion in the short to medium term. Sabre in particular is notable in that that was a 2006 co-investment we made. It was taken public in April of this year. Has performed reasonably well, and today is 4.2% of the NAV of the total vehicle. So again, wanted to highlight that for the first time, and we'll update you on this portfolio in future. So with that, I'll hand back to Peter.
Thank you very much, Paul. Moving forward then to page 17, you can see NBPE's capital position. Now, the methodology that we're using here is somewhat different than we have used in the past. So what I'll do is walk through some of the changes that we're making here and how we're showing our capital position. Now, the purpose of this analysis has always been to compare our available capital, which is really our cash and our unused credit facility, with our unfunded commitments. Now, you know, these unfunded commitments, you know, to funds or to individual transactions are likely to be drawn down over multiple years, not all at once, but we do think this is a useful tool, useful metrics for analyzing our liquidity position overall. Now, we've historically used just our total unfunded commitments in conducting this analysis, even commitments to funds which were past their investment period or were unlikely to ever be called. Now, as our portfolio has matured, we found that using that methodology was less and less relevant and was including a larger portion of commitments that we thought just were stale and unlikely to be called, and so therefore we're skewing the numbers. So what we have done here is we have decided to make certain adjustments to reflect on a conservative basis the commitments that we believe, to include really only the commitments that we believe have a reasonable chance of actually being called. So what we can do, what we've done here is we've adjusted our unfunded commitments downward by $52 million to reflect funds that are past their investment period, to reflect the commitments to fund-to funds managed by Neuberger, which we believe are highly unlikely to ever be called, and certain other similar adjustments. Now, this results in NBP having adjusted unfunded commitments of $133 million, and that's compared to our capital resources of $169.7 million for a commitment coverage ratio on an adjusted basis of 128%. So now let's look at our dividend policy on page 18. NBPE intends to continue to pay sustainable dividends to our shareholders and have that be backed by the cash yield generated from our yielding investments. So As Paul walked you through, we have almost $300 million in our yielding investment portfolio. And that portfolio has a cash yield of 9.4% and a total yield of 10.2%. So the cash yield alone from that portion of our portfolio covers 118% of our annualized dividend. So we've paid 45 cents a share in dividends in 2014, and this results in a dividend yield of 4.2% based on share price or 3.3% based on NAV. So importantly, though, dividends are not the only way that you as our shareholders are seeing returns from NBPE. So we're proud of the NAV growth that NBPE has been able to generate, and both in the short term and in the long term. And you can see those returns on page 19. If you look, NBPE has shown strong growth in NAV on a consistent basis, and whether that's on a year-to-date basis, a one-year, a three-year, a five-year, or since inception back in 2007, NBPE has shown very consistent NAV growth. What we've also seen is solid share price performance from NBPE as well, particularly in the last year, in the last 12 months, as well as since the financial crisis. And you can see the table of numbers there and see what each of those returns are for the different periods. Now, one area, though, where we have not been pleased, frankly, is the discount at which NBPE trades. And you can see an analysis of our discount on page 20. Now, if you look at the NBPE portfolio, as John and Paul have walked you through, you can see our portfolio is 37% in direct yielding investments. And we believe that those are best compared to closed-end credit funds. 29% of our portfolio is in direct co-investments, which we believe is most similar to direct private equity vehicles. And 34% of our portfolio is in funds, which one could reasonably compare to the listed fund-to-funds market. Now, if you look at our overall discount for NBPE, which recently was 18.9%, you can see that the discount for NBPE is somewhere between the discount for the direct private equity vehicles and the fund of funds. What that means is that we are not getting credit, no pun intended, for the 37% of our portfolio, which we have in yielding investments, at least when it comes to the discount. Now, given the NAV growth that NBPE has exhibited over the last 7 years on a consistent basis, our covered dividend, and the strength of our balance sheet, we believe this discount is unjustified. So moving on page 21, you can see how our share price has performed on a graphical basis as well as NAV over the last 12 months. And on page 22, you can see a similar graph for our ZDPs, which continue to trade well and have a GRY currently of 3.6%. Now, page 23 shows the liquidity figures for our ordinary shares. We've had 13 million shares of ordinary shares traded year to date. So far this year, that's both on exchange and over the counter. That results in an average daily trading volume of 78,000 shares. And also important to note is that our board of directors approved an extension of our share buyback program until November of this year. So in summary, we believe that NBPE offers a compelling investment opportunity with a strong track record of NAV growth, an attractive portfolio of direct investments, and a policy of paying sustainable covered dividends. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your attention and open it up to any questions that you may have.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from Rob Jones with Liberum.
Hi, Peter. It's Rob Jones. How are you doing?
Good, Rob. How are you?
Yeah, very, very good. Thank you. Just a couple of quick questions from me. Firstly, on the rate of realization so far in the year, it's obviously been very strong and pleasing and obviously aided NAV growth so far, given the uplifts you've been seeing upon exits. Is there any kind of key factors that you believe will result in a slowdown in that rate of realizations over the remainder of the calendar year, or are you assuming that the kind of average rate of realizations that's occurred so far would continue for the remainder of the calendar year?
Well, a couple of points there. I'll give you my thoughts, and then John, Paul, you guys can share yours, obviously. We think we've built a very good portfolio in NBPE, and as John, Paul mentioned, we focus on investments that we think have a more likelihood of having a higher velocity of both investment and realization, and so we would expect that to continue. Obviously, though, our portfolio is not going to be immune from any macroeconomic situation. So if we continue to have a robust macroeconomic environment, we would expect the portfolio to continue to perform well on that basis. Obviously, if you had a less robust macroeconomic situation, then you would expect, a slowdown in realization activity. Historically across the private equity industry, you have a degree of seasonality with the larger amounts of distributions typically being in Q4. Now, whether or not that will continue this year, remains to be seen. But there's nothing that I see that would, expect there to be a slowdown other than the obvious, macroeconomic factors that could affect things. John, Paul, do you have a different thoughts?
Not a different thought, just an additional point, Peter. Rob, as you know, our fund portfolio, which is now in the $260 million or so range of value, are more mature investments that we made mostly 4, 5, 6 years ago. And so those underlying funds, they have portfolio companies that are maturing, which is why you see a very good quarterly returns from those funds. So one would expect that those portfolios will continue to generate substantial cash back as our fund portfolio winds down. So I would think that would continue to be a strong source of capital back.
Great, thanks. And then the other question from me was just on the dividend. Obviously, it's good to see now a well-covered dividend on a kind of pro forma, I guess, basis. But is there any scope in your view to grow the dividend going forward? Was that something you'd like to potentially look to do?
Well, clearly, as with all companies,
our goal is to decide, I suppose. But.
Yeah, as with all companies, right? The goal is always with a dividend to maintain or increase over time, as opposed to decrease. So that's something that we would obviously look to do, but look to do on a very prudent basis. Having that be a covered, having our dividend continue to be covered, by the yield coming off of that portion of our investment portfolio. So yes, it is something we'd like to grow over time, but obviously very focused on the coverage of that dividend.
Great, thanks.
Your next question comes from Ian Schooler with Oriel Securities.
Good morning, guys. Looking at the overall shape of the portfolio, fund investments now down to 34%. If you take the duration of the funds that you own, I mean, when would you expect that number to sort of head down towards 10%? And would you actually be comfortable with that, or would you like to start making some new commitments at some point?
On the last point first, the core focus of NBPE is to make direct investments. Never say never on anything in the investment world, but the core focus would continue to be on direct investment activity. And I don't believe we've made a new, third party fund commitments, in the last 3.5+ years. And so that's on that aspect. In terms of the time frame, John's exactly right in that we expect to see robust realizations out of that portion of the portfolio. Frankly, I think the biggest factor will be more macroeconomic in terms of whether that happens, reaches the level you describe over kind of, whether that's a, 18-month, process or a, 3+ year process. That's going to be very much macroeconomic dependent. Obviously, as well, with every investment that we have, whether it's a fund investment or a direct investment, we also look from time to time, you know, what price, it's the classic analysis of what price could we get for any asset, and are we better off by selling and redeploying that capital, or whether we're better off by holding. That's something that we look at for every investment in our portfolio, including our funds.
Okay, that's very clear, Peter. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Louis Margulis with Select Advisors.
Hi, Peter. You haven't heard from me in a long time. You thought you got rid of me finally.
No, Lou, we're happy to have you.
We've been a happy shareholder since the end of 2008, so we're very happy campers. I noticed in the last 6 months you've drawn down $65 million of your credit facility. What is your plan for that? Number one, do you think this is the right time to be leveraging the portfolio? Where we are given the rally in markets that has obviously created a lot of the value creation potential. I'd just like a little understanding of what you're envisioning to do with that credit facility for the next 6, 12, 24 months.
Sure. Well, first of all, you know, when we're looking at the opportunity sets, we're looking at both the macro environment and we're also looking at the individual investments that we're finding. And if we were only looking at the macro and public equity market levels, we would, you know, frankly be agreeing with you. When we're looking at the individual transactions that we're seeing, we think those are, you know, good opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis and prudent uses of that portion of the portfolio. Also, because we have much less of our portfolio in funds and more of it in direct investments, and a lot of our portfolio is in yielding investments that we're making on one-off bases, without being a large unfunded commitment, we think that we can more prudently make use of some leverage in the portfolio and do that on a prudent basis. But we are a bit very cautious in how we do that. We're very focused on liquidity. That's, you know, the capital analysis, you know, the analysis of our capital position that we looked at. That's something that we focus on a lot. But what we have signaled is that, you know, our plan would be to, across the cycle, be 110 to 120% invested, typically with some ability to go a bit above or a bit below that, based upon, you know, individual opportunities that we're seeing, but also very, you know, keeping very focused on the overall amount of leverage and very much the liquidity aspect as well. John, anything you want to add to that?
Just that as our mix of investments has changed to more credit investments, it's a different level of risk that we're undertaking on typically on our new investments, as more of those have been focused on credit investments than if we'd been doing just equity investments. So I agree with everything you said, Peter, but that's also something that impacts what risk we're actually taking.
Yeah. You know, there are some very knowledgeable players around with a long view of history, not the least of which was Sam Zell on the TV this morning. A lot of smart guys, Grant the Mayo, are talking about that we are at elevated levels and your fund is hardly totally isolated or insulated from the effects of the equity market, quite the contrary. You're a fund with a long duration and a beneficiary of these equity markets. As a shareholder, I'm not thrilled over this increase in leverage.
And we agree we're not immune. I think I would notice though that if you look at, for example, where we're holding our assets, we're holding them at the metrics that Paul described at something, you know, a bit north of 10 times EBITDA. Whereas if you look at public equity markets there, you know, materially higher valuations are being applied to that. So I think that while on the exits we're getting the beneficiary of that, it's not as if our portfolio is being held at those levels. So I think that
the portfolio is well valued. The stock is absurdly priced. It should be, you know, as you and I have had this conversation for 5 years, that I think the stock should trade at a premium because of the value added that you bring. And this is why we've never sold a share, and we, you know, buy shares on a regular basis. But I'm not convinced that this is an opportune time, regardless of your portfolio. One could argue that you are increasing the risk of your portfolio by going to specific investments as opposed to a highly diversified fund investment portfolio of 5 years ago. So it's, I understand your point about being a credit fund with a shorter duration, but the risk of the portfolio has certainly gone up. I don't mean to be.
Sorry, from a portfolio concentration perspective, you're correct, and obviously there's more, there's fewer positions, though still highly diversified.
No question. No question about it.
But the one area that you've seen closed-end private equity vehicles historically get into trouble, it's been more on that issue of the liquidity and the unfunded commitments is where most of the risk is there, and that's where that's been a key area of focus for us.
No, I wasn't worrying specifically about the closed-end fund issue, which I totally agree with what you've said, but I'm just not convinced this is the right time in the cycle to be increasing leverage. Thank you very much. We are delighted shareholders. We will, you know, until this thing sells at a premium, we will not sell any shares.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Again, for any questions, please press star, then the number one. There are no further questions at this time.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. And as always, please feel free to contact any of us with more specific questions you may have. Thanks again.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.